From unsubstantiated reports of immigrants from Haiti stealing pets in Springfield, Ohio, to now debunked stories of Venezuelan immigrants taking over apartment complexes in Colorado, to a Honduran immigrant charged in the DWI death of a St. Louis police officer, immigrant crime has sparked fears in recent weeks. But do online posts and stories really reflect the actual statistics of crimes committed by immigrants to the United States? Our next guest took a look. She's bringing those stats in today. Webster University criminologist Allison Gorga joins us in studio. Welcome back to KMOX.
Thank you very much.
So what do the numbers tell us?
Immigration does not lead to higher crime rates. If anything, it actually reduces crime. And we find this to be true both at the individual level and the aggregate level. So when we compare individual immigrants to non-immigrants, we find that those who are born in the United States actually commit more crime than those who are born elsewhere. And we also find that at the aggregate. So when we compare cities or neighborhoods or counties that have high concentrations of immigrant populations, those communities have lower crime rates than areas that don't have those immigrant populations.
What are some of the things that really jump out to you here in terms of trends?
Well, this has been a finding that we've had for many decades now. These are robust findings. There are a few reasons why immigrants lead to lower crime rates. The most obvious is that people who come to the United States are coming here for opportunities and they don't want to squander them. They risk quite a lot to be here and they're not playing around with the rules, so they tend to follow them. Another issue is that immigrants come from predominantly more community and family-oriented cultures, whereas U.S. culture is more individualistic. It's also more materialistic. So people who are born here in the United States commit higher crime rates for that reason as well. And then another reason is that when immigrants come to the United States, they often settle in the same area as people from their same background. And this creates an ethnic enclave economy. They can revitalize an area and contribute to stronger informal social controls at the neighborhood level. They also provide stable jobs to each other and to U.S.-born individuals. They are also a significant consumer base as well.
I want to drill down into some of the numbers some more. Do we have any breakdown, for example, of undocumented versus document immigrants and their involvement in crime?
At the individual level, that's tricky to assess because undocumented immigrants are not taking surveys. They try to stay for the same reason that they're not committing crime. They're trying to not draw any kind of attention to themselves. But the aggregate level data does capture undocumented citizens. We have a pretty good sense of how many people live in an area. And so we can assess how many of them are documented. And so we can sort of do the math and figure out that there's undocumented immigrants there. And it doesn't seem to have an effect on the crime rates.
Now, this is a very complicated issue. As a criminologist, talk to us about the fact that these numbers come from law enforcement actions, you know, and we don't know about things that are unsolved. So, you know, how do we put that in context?
Well, the police have actually been given quite a lot of resources to deal with the issue of immigrant crime. And that's a relatively new development. But in the last 10 to 15 years, ICE and local law enforcement have been funded quite extensively to track these issues. And people do get deported for very minor crimes. They are sweeping up really minor cases. But the enforcement is also disproportionate. So the majority of people who are targeted by these offenses are people who are from Latin American countries, Central American countries. So about 18% of the people who are in the United States that are undocumented are from Canada, Europe, Africa, and Asia. But those only represent 3% of those who are deported.
How does the public get access to this information? Megan just started this entire segment by talking about the story of Aurora, Colorado that was making the rounds, that was debunked. Obviously, the debate itself brought up the pets that were talked about in Ohio. How do you, as a public constituent, research this yourself?
Yeah, there's plenty of sources available online. The New York Times did a piece in 2018 that gathered data from hundreds of U.S. cities and their crime rates over time and looked at how their crimes, how their violent crime changed over time, and then how their immigrant population changed over time. And that's an interactive tool. So you can plug in and you can find St. Louis in there and see how our immigrant population changed and how our crime rate changed. And they find that on the whole, most places saw an increase in immigration and a decrease in crime. There's also a data analyst, Jeff Asher, who's published lots of stuff on his blog about border counties. So he found that border counties in Texas had significantly lower crime rates than non-border counties within Texas, as well as compared to the national average. So those are some sources that people can look to.
Now, in your research, you've contended that some of the traditional practices in this country for how we deal with immigrant crime have actually exacerbated the problem instead of providing solutions. Explain that.
Yeah. So when we engage in mass deportations, that can disrupt families where there's maybe mixed statuses. So some family members remain usually, and that can disrupt families, that can disrupt their housing as well. So that could lead to homelessness. It could lead to employment disruption. And for children, it could lead to worse academic achievement, all of which are associated with higher crime rates. Also, the MS-13 threat that we have today is largely a product of mass deportation policies. So MS-13 originally was a set of youth gangs all over the United States, but they were not connected with one another. They were diffuse. They were unorganized. There was no centralized power. We mass deported youth from these gangs who were committing serious offenses. But when they were deported back to their home country, they knew very little of their home country. Many of them came to the United States as children. Some of them didn't even speak proper Spanish. And so when they were back in El Salvador, for example, who could they turn to but the other MS-13 gang members? So now you have gang members who were from L.A. and New Jersey and Pennsylvania that are all connected now. So MS-13 now became this sort of centralized threat that is a really dense network of gang members.
To wrap us up here, you know, you talked about the overall view of crime committed by U.S. citizens or native-born individuals versus immigrants. What are those actual numbers?
I don't have them off the top of my head. It's difficult. You want to control for a lot of different variables. You want to control for economic status. I don't have those numbers on hand.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Put you on the spot there.
Allison, thank you so much for coming in. Allison Gorga, Webster University. Very eye-opening criminologist with us here on KMOX. Thank you.
Thank you very much.